Welcome to the Theorist-Composer Collaboration, a podcast interview series highlighting modern composers and their compositions. My name is Aaron DiZarilla. I'm the host of this podcast and also a graduate music theory student at Florida State University. Today I will be talking with the composer Will Davenport, who, alongside his piece Concerto for Six-String Electric Violin, is a featured guest for this episode. I talk with Will about his year in composition, reflections on graduate studies, writing a master's thesis, orchestrating electric strings, and much more. So, without further ado, this is an excerpt from Concerto for Six-String Electric Violin, and welcome to the TCC.
Thank you.
Again, the music that you were just listening to is an excerpt from the piece titled Concerto for Six String Electric Violin by the composer Will Davenport, who, alongside his music, is the featured guest for this episode. That leads me to welcome Will back to the program. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm happy to be back on this for a third time. I'm traveling for the holidays a lot, so I've been kind of all over the place while the semester ends, but overall, doing pretty good.
Yes, third episode. The first time was you were the third guest I ever had. This is episode 28, but you were episode 3. And then I don't quite remember the number because it gets foggier as the numbers go up. But then you were on the first roundtable with Justine, and here you are back again for a solo feature. But for people uninitiated, how about you go ahead, introduce yourself personally, professionally, academically, whatever you choose.
Yeah, so Will Davenport, I am a second-year master's student at Florida State University. Studying composition, and a lot of my music is kind of centered around kind of old ideas and forms with newer, more contemporary elements thrown in there, kind of mixing together those different points in time.
Sure, and that's certainly the case for today. Anyone from the title, a six-string electric violin concerto. There's a lot of a lot to unpack there, and we'll certainly get to that. But for people who are initiated, who have seen the previous episodes, or just what have you been up to since the last time? You know, okay, so episode 3, that was in the late spring of this year, 2024, and then the roundtable was late July, early August. So
yeah, midsummer.
Yeah, so how was your semester? How was the fall? You're almost in the spring, you'll be graduating with your master's. So how's it going?
It's kind of strange because if you ask anyone getting their master's, especially in music, it feels like you just got there and suddenly you're leaving. I'm sure you feel similarly, but it's a very strange feeling after undergrad, spending 4 years in one place and then spending half that time and getting a master's degree. But yeah, the fall semester went well. It's at the beginning of this fall semester, I finished writing the piece we're about to talk about, which took me a year, and it's basically the only thing I wrote. So this past semester, I spent a lot of time writing smaller pieces and kind of making up for the kind of gap in my repertoire of music.
Yes, and so, well, let's jump the gun a little bit because, I mean, this piece today is very significant for you. In a number of ways, not just the effort put in, but this is also your master's thesis, the concerto for six string of electric violin. You almost did that in reverse order. I mean, if you have 2 years to do your master's and you have to write a thesis for it, you would expect someone to do that in their second year, not their first, and then write a bunch of small pieces first. But you really went for it right away.
Yeah, that it ended up, I ended up going into Florida State with the project already kind of in the process, and I didn't plan on spending a full year working on the piece, but it just ended up being that I really felt the need to do this piece justice, and I didn't want to cut any corners, but I was spending so much time on this piece. And so I talked with the composition faculty, and they kind of agreed that I shouldn't do that again. and so I that piece ended up just being my master's thesis, which is really, really nice. I got all the stress out of the way. I got the huge project out of the way. And so I can just focus on kind of just writing music and improving and kind of making the most out of my time at Florida State while it lasts.
Certainly. I don't know if you remember this, Will, but this is the piece that spurred the discussion that started the idea in my head for this podcast. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I've referenced many, well, everyone doesn't know this, but I've actually referenced in the abstract this concerto many times on this show and to other people and all sorts of different people, even recently at SMT, about how it was one day in the library when we were sitting there in the spring and you were working on it. As you did, you basically only, other than class assignments, you only worked on this, as you said. I feel like you were always working on it, period. And at the beginning of this semester, you were basically glued to your computer engraving it, too, all the parts. And And screaming out finale before it died, as we all know. But I remember it was, I believe, the second theme of the first movement, where you kept wanting, or it looked like you just had me, you're like, oh, can you, do you want to listen to it? I said, sure. And it seemed like in the melody, you kept wanting to resolve to F sharp, but you kept eliding the resolution to F sharp in this slower melody. And it was really cool the ways that you were doing it and how you were avoiding the resolution. I thought it was so damn cool. And then after the recording ended, or the MIDI realization, I was telling you all that, and you're like, oh, wow, that's really neat. I was not on purpose in the slightest. And then that, you know, that spurred the whole talking to composers from a theoretical perspective and so on. But so this piece has been a big part of your life for quite a while.
Yeah, it's really, really weird working on a piece for so long, because that's just music to me at that point. That was like, I need to sit down and write music. And it was just that piece. And after I finally finished the piece, I didn't write anything for like 2 months or something. I obviously like sketched random things and came up with a little melodies and stuff, but it was really strange, like kind of like I'm out of the like long piece jail, and I can actually do whatever I want. I actually have whatever freedom. I can write whatever. I'm not constrained by like what comes before in this piece and what comes after, and like, am I staying in style of the piece, and are all the movements like related enough but not related completely? And I didn't have to think about that anymore, and it took a while to finally realize like I can just do whatever I want. it was nice.
Long piece jail. I like that.
I think if you talk to other composers who worked on something, they understand. For some reason, they're like, when you're 90% through a piece and you have to write like a minute of music, that will take longer than the like 10 minutes of music you wrote in the beginning. There's something about it. I don't know.
That sounds like torture. I ain't gonna lie. I'm not gonna lie. That sounds like torture. Well, so I guess we can't really talk much more about, and it's also kind of funny because, you know, we start the podcast, or I start the pod, whatever, usually with composer bio and background. Of course, you've been on this podcast before, so not so much of that, but we can't really, it's hard to talk about what you've been up to without just talking about the piece today, because it's been such a big part of what you've done. And I guess we can't really go much further talking about the performance or anything else without talking about a very special collaborator that was integral to you writing this and having it performed. And can you talk about him?
Absolutely. It would be my pleasure. Noah J. Grunberg, who is a friend of mine from, we did our undergraduate at Ohio University. He was a fellow composer at the time, and he still writes music today, but then he went to go and pursue a master's degree in electric violin performance. And he was the first person in the country to ever do so. And I just knew him from like kind of drinking at his house and hanging out.
Wait, so where is he getting a master's in that? What university is offering that program?
So University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign originally was offering the program, but they cut the program because of funding and just the classic academic bureaucracy stuff. It's unfortunate, but he didn't end up getting the degree, but he basically completed like 1¾ years of the degree and did a recital and did most of the basic components of the degree. But yeah, University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign originally was the one offering that degree.
Now, I'm no administrator. I'm certainly not an accountant, so I don't know how these things work, but it's wild to go through, you want to talk about saving money, going through all the administrative, bureaucratic, and educational time to build a program. And they're like, oh, yeah, time to get rid of it to cut costs and waste all that time and money spent building a program.
Yeah, if you ever have Noah on the podcast, he'll have maybe some words to say about it, and maybe he'll be very political about it and not say anything about it. It was definitely a confusing choice from UIUC, so
Let's stick with
I don't
that.
know.
Confusing.
Yeah, confusing choice.
Now, from what you've told me, Noah is quite the eclectic person in a number of ways.
I'll tell you some items on his resume. He is a board certified dietitian and personal trainer from, I believe, Stanford. He has been commissioned to climb all 50 of each state's highest peaks and take photography, build a photography collection of each of the peaks, and write music based off of each of those peaks. All the fun, everything is funded. Let's see what else.
Who's got that mountain money?
I don't know. I
Anyways,
I'm
go
kind
on.
of I'd love to hike and take photos. Let's see. He is the substitute for the electric violinist of the band Kansas. He
Like the Kansas?
like Kansas the band.
Like from the 80s and 70s.
Yes.
Wow. I didn't. That's wild. Not some like underground, like alt rock band from the late 90s. You're talking about like Carry On, Wayward Son and Dust in the Wind, Kansas.
Yeah, so he's
Okay.
the substitute.
Oh my gosh.
The current violinist, Joe Dennison, is a good friend of Noah's, and he the electric violin world ends up being a little small, so you get to know some pretty cool people. And I'm jealous. He played on Broadway with the Broadway cast of Hamilton. Just and he's also just like insanely ripped and a crazy like bodybuilder, and he's an amazing performer, and obviously he knows his way about around the electric violin pretty well. He's fantastic. I'm so happy that I am his friend and get to experience a fraction of some of the shenanigans he gets up to. He also he brews his own wine and mead.
It really does sound like you got a Skyrim character. He's got so many side quests, and then like
He's incredible. He's also like a fantastic composer, arranger. He's a big proponent of arranging a lot of box work for the electric violin, especially some of the ones that are either lost or survive only through different arrangements. And so he's like kind of reconstructing these original compositions by Bach into their original genre of like a triple concerto and all this stuff he is doing. And it is such a privilege to get to know him and work on some stuff. Also next year he's going to be touring in Asia and Oceania for 9 months with his EDM hip hop group.
Oh, of course. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
Also, just audience, so it's not hard to tell. Will and I are friends. We both go to Florida State. We're actually both going to graduate at the same time in the spring, as Will alluded to. I've talked about this piece many times with Will. All of us have with Will. I was at the premiere, which we're going to talk about in a second. And of course, Will has told us all about this very illustrious guy. His resume is so spectacular. I hadn't even heard some of this stuff, and we've talked about it many times. So yeah, you definitely got a very special guy for it. And of course, he was down here in Florida not too long ago for the premiere of Concerto for Six String Electric Violin. And can you tell us a bit about the premiere of the piece?
Yeah, so the piece was premiered with the Florida State Electric Chamber or Ensemble or Echo. The piece was performed on that concert in November, and at first I was like, are you sure you want this piece to take up half your concert? And the professor who runs the ensemble, Dr. Gumer Cholu, he was like, absolutely. The piece itself is written for one soloist and a string orchestra. But the way I wrote it, any like double stops or Debussy, all these can be played on single instruments. And to kind of facilitate the ability to premiere this piece, the ensemble was played by a quintet of strings. So it was a quintet of strings, two violins, a viola, cello, and a bass, and then Noah. And all the ensemble members were also playing on these electric instruments that Florida State owns, but rarely ever get played. And so I think this was either the first or second time that all of these electric instruments that the university owns were able to be played in a concert together, all playing with one another. So it was super exciting. It was a great opportunity, and it kind of all just kind of fell in place. It was really nice. The all a lot of 3 out of 5 of the ensemble members were just composers who were gracious enough to perform, and just happened to their main instrument just happened to be what we were looking for. So this all kind of just fell together in the beginning of this fall semester.
Yeah, I was going to stop you a second there, because it's not just a string ensemble. The fact that all of them are electric was wild. And also, I mean, Florida State, as far as music programs go, is pretty wealthy. Again, as far as music programs go, but still, the fact that they had all those electric instruments is wild. They're great. I don't think I've ever seen an electric upright bass like that. I don't th And I've certainly never seen an electric viola. So that was pretty wild.
It was really fun working with all the electric instruments. And you say, like, you mentioned Florida State's better than most economy, but these electric instruments are generally, especially the Yamaha ones we were using, they're generally cheaper than some like semi-professional grade instruments.
Oh
And
yeah.
so, yeah, I mean,
How about
so,
accessibility? Usually programs don't care to pay for, maybe they'll have an electric violin, not a whole quintet.
that is true. Yeah.
Like, yeah, an acoustic violin. I mean, I'm not gonna disclose it, but I remember Amelia, who I'm very good friends with from University of Florida. Now she's at Florida State, one of your violinists in the ensemble. I remember when they were warming up, I went up to her and I was like, oh, that's cool. That's a cool violin. And she's like, yeah, it's blah, blah, blah amount. I was like, oh, wow. But then I was like, man, that's really expensive. But then I was like, oh, and we made a joke about like our personal violins are like quintuple that amount. But and also, that's not a brag, everybody. Anyways, that's just a fact. But oh, it was so cool. As I guess I haven't said it directly, but I was there. Basically, everyone from our quadrant of friends and all of the composition professors and Dr. Jones, who's the head of theory and composition at Florida State, was there. I remember just the feeling of the concerts. We're all friends with you, Will, and we were there to support you. We've seen you work on this piece the entire time you've been at Florida State. But it really felt like you were a headliner for the concert. And then, like how, a symphony will be doing Dvorak 9, but then there's like three or four like pieces beforehand. Not to discredit the other people who are on the Echo concert that night. It was all great music. But it was like that where like the main headliner was at the end of the concert, just because it was such a big piece.
Well, they say if you want to go see a premiere, go to a concert where they play Beethoven 5. Because
Sure.
they'll like sneak a premiere in there so they get people to come see the concert. But it was like, I mean, all the pieces were on the concert were fantastic. There was another premiere as well. There were just a bunch of pieces by living composers using electronics that were So cool. But it was kind of nice to actually be like the last piece on the concert instead of just like the like prelude to the real concert, you know? Like that did it was cool.
Yeah, and again, not to, as you just said, the music was great, but in this case, you were the Beethoven Five.
I
In this
know, I gotta
case.
be the Beethoven Five. It's awesome.
Well, so it was a fantastic concert. It was great to experience it live. And so I guess let's back up a little bit. Now that we've set the stage of why it's so important, all the work that you did, why did you choose this ensemble, this solo instrument? I mean, electric violin is already an auxiliary instrument, especially putting it in a very traditional format like a concerto is already a little bit different, but then six string. I mean, I've seen five string, where it adds the C string for the viola, but six string as a violinist, that's crazy. So what embarked you on this journey from the get-go?
I mean, ultimately, so Noah is amazing at making things happen.
Clearly.
As you can tell from all the things he's able to do. And I mean, I didn't need a whole lot of convincing, honestly. One day, I think I mentioned that I'd finished the piece I was currently working on to him, and he was like, "Well, now that you're not writing a piece, you should write me a concerto." And I think that's about all the convincing he needed to
I think
do.
he told you. I don't think he
No,
convinced you.
he was like, write me a concerto. And honestly, like I love the genre itself of concerto, and I'm a huge fan of it. And this idea of you have this like kind of through line that the audience can like follow along and like a character they can be sympathetic with. It works so well from an audience's point of view, which is really important to me when it comes to the music I write. And so I've been wanting to write this some sort of concerto for a while, and he was like, write me one. I knew he would play it multiple times, so I was like, that seems good to me. That I'm sold.
Sure. And now I have some other questions about how you went about writing it, because this is a monster, a nearly 30-minute piece.
Yeah.
But let's get into I'll in, instead of front loading, I'll splice it up a little bit since we've been talking about context so much. We got three movements here. And let's before we get to some more of those, how you wrote this, let's get into the first movement, which is titled Allegro Elettrico, which is a
Yeah.
bit tongue in cheek,
Of course, of course.
as you tend to do.
Thank you.
And in the formal plan, at least, you've talked about adapting older styles into new formats and so on. This is a concerto, but the first movement of a concerto very traditionally is allegro. It's usually labeled as that, or at least is very similar to that. And you do have first theme, second theme. It's not strictly, and certainly not in the way you composed it, but the general formal plan is still sonata form, which is very typical for the first movement of a concerto. So, can you just talk about this movement a little bit?
Yeah, of course. The goal with the piece as a whole is like I wanted to write this kind of standard concerto for the electric violin, and just because the repertoire is so little for the instrument, I wanted to kind of add that to what was already there. And there's a good amount from a lot of the current electric violinist composers out there, but I wanted to have this like concerto that could be end up being like the standard or this concerto that electric violinists know. So with that, this first movement, I wanted to write this kind of sonata form. And so the two themes ended up the again the I keep talking about the piece as a whole, but I wanted to, as well as explore what the instrument can do, I was writing this for Noah. And so I wanted to, in certain spots, paint a portrait of him. And I think having this first theme, which is very like raucous and like angry and metal at times, having this like really like powerful sounding theme, coupled with this kind of intimate jazz ballad, singing lyrical theme. Those are both aspects of Noah, which I love him for, and he exemplifies, and you can see it on the stage as he performs.
I can certainly say that. I mean, his electric violin was like the V guitars, where the body of the guitar is like a big red V. That's basically what the electric violin looked like.
Yeah, the Viper.
Yes. And also, obvious to anyone listening at this point, one of the biggest elements that contribute to that, more than just not more, but just as much as you're writing almost, is the distortion and overdrive placed onto the solo electric violin. What was the thought behind that?
Oh yeah. So obviously the first movement, or the first theme in the first movement has this kind of like, I purposely wrote it to be this kind of metal sounding, like pretty hard, like headbanging tune. And the distortion just seemed like it was adding on to the character of the theme itself. And I wanted to tie those like all the different tones that the electric violin could do. I wanted to explore it throughout this piece, and I definitely wanted to kind of tie the tones with the themes themselves and kind of show off what the electric violin is capable of. And so we Noah and I had long discussions about the tone for each movement, and at this measure, we're like, what are we going to be doing here? And this like kind of heavy distortion that he was able to make, I think fit really well with some of the material that was in there.
I would agree. I would agree. And one thing that I noted during you can hear it in the recording, and I noticed it while there. And as a violinist, I was surprised that there was no vibrato, for the most part, in the first movement. Was that a Noah decision, a technical decision, or is that just not stylistic?
That's interesting. That's not something I necessarily listened for.
Well,
I'm a sneeze.
I am a string player, so that's just.
Yeah, I think at least for the first theme, stylistically, you like when a guitar is like playing power chords and like really like ripping it, there's not a whole lot of vibrato going on. And I think that was kind of a stylistic choice that Noah made, to keep in theme with this kind of like rock aesthetic. And then in the second theme, I think I kind of mentioned to him that I wanted this kind of like smooth like lead synth sound as if you're like playing it on the keyboard, like some sort of synthesizer. And I guess there as well, vibrato isn't as much as part of the style as I guess like kind of classical violin playing would. I think a lot of like, in classical violin playing, this vibrato helps like thicken up the texture and make this like beautiful, rich tone. But with Noah, he was able to kind of create these tones and stuff without needing to do the vibrato, and I think he kind of used it as more of as an ornament in certain spots.
Always curious about those sort of creative decision. And so before moving on, let's take it back up to some of those composition questions that I was thinking about earlier. So three movements, it's 25 minutes long, and you worked on this for about a year. How did you approach writing it literally? What movement did you start with? What order were they created? And how are you thinking about that?
I think pretty much near the beginning, like I said, I had this idea of like this fast sonata, slow lyrical, and then funny movements. And as kind of mostly just as a compositional exercise, and you really just have to start somewhere, I started with the third movement. Part of that is because I think I had a better idea of what I wanted for that third movement. I think I had just finished writing. I recently finished writing Reed Quintet, and so this kind of like humoristic, is that a word? Humor character in the music that was still kind of on my mind. And what in the process of writing that movement, I think I got a good sense of how to write for the instrument, how I wanted to be writing for the ensemble throughout this piece. And yeah, I definitely wanted to make sure I did the first movement as best as I could. And I think formally writing in a sonata form and getting these like two distinct themes together, I wanted to have more experience writing for the instrument and for the ensemble. And so I kind of started with this like flashy show piece with a lot of like scales and a lot of like fun rhythmic things going on. I'm sure we'll talk about that later, but I knew how to write. And it was kind of transferring those ideas to the instruments helped me learn how to write for those instruments as I went along, which is kind of funny because I learned how to write the piece I'm writing as I wrote the piece.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest things I want to talk about, and I don't think anything better shows your skill and mastery of writing for electric violin than the second movement, which is titled Meditation. This is my favorite part of the concerto, actually. The looping is just mesmerizing because for a good deal of movement two, it's just Noah playing different layers harmonically and melodically on top of one another. And I've seen that sort of stuff before, like at bars and on the street. It's really cool. It's really neat. Hardly ever to this level and extent in a classical setting. And my God, I've never seen a score of it either. I don't even understand how you did not personally have regular access to the electric violin because, I mean, it's not yours and Noah's going about to mountain peaks around the country periodically. And so I know you're in communication with him, but, and you're also not a violinist to begin with, much less a six-string electric violinist. How did you write for this instrument for so long? And especially with all these very intricate, specially placed looping layers in movement two.
This movement was maybe the hardest to kind of figure out what exactly I wanted. I knew I wanted to do something with the looping pedal, something with like this delay pedal, reverberation, all these like effects that kind of create this huge atmosphere just from one single instrument. And I guess it started with just asking Noah to send me pieces for the electric violin, for the solo violin, pieces that showed off different pedals. There is a fantastic arrangement of a piece. It's Tracy Silverman's arrangement of I believe the second movement of Beethoven's Seventh Symphony. And it's not the whole movement, but it's kind of this like reoccurring theme that everybody knows. And he uses the his looping pedal, and he uses the delay pedal in a very similar way to how I'm using it here. And he basically like layers on top of himself, and he uses this delay pedal to kind of fill out the sound. And he eventually ends up like soloing over it, which is soloing over Beethoven. It's fantastic. I highly recommend everybody check out that video. It's on YouTube. Just look up Tracy Silverman Beethoven. But that was super helpful. That piece was a big in that kind of arrangement was a big influence on this movement. And in writing this movement, once I'd so I wrote the movements 3-2-1, and so I wrote the third movement, and so I had a pretty good sense of like the range of the agility in different ranges and like how the instrument can like almost accompany itself because I it goes down to F two, I believe. It's got this giant range, which is really, really cool. And kind of coming up with the idea, Ravel's Piano Concerto in G, which has the soloist just play alone with this super, super simple, really like melodic thing. There's nothing like virtuosic about it, besides like the kind of lyrical aspect of it. But it's just the simple melody and rhythm. And he just plays alone for so long, and then the instrument, the ensemble kind of creeps in after it, and it that was a huge influence as well. And so I wanted to kind of steal that idea while also using the looping pedal as well as the delay pedal, as well as showcasing kind of how much this instrument can do on its own. Because I wanted to show off like, yeah, this is a fantastic ensemble instrument. It's a soloist. It can play it like it's the cello, it's the viola, it's the violin. It can be the bass sometimes if you have a octave pedal. But I wanted to show off its ability just to be by itself. And so we end up with this second movement. So I guess I should probably explain kind of what the delay and looping pedals are for those who don't know. Delay pedal, basically, you play something and then it's repeated a certain amount of times later as it decays. So it'll be like ba 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 ba, and so it kind of trails off. And so I use that in the beginning of the second movement. And so Noah plays a note to kind of get the tempo of the delay. The delay is set to basically every bar, it'll repeat. And so he plays a quarter note, a bar later, that quarter note gets repeated. And those repetitions decay over the course of like 8 measures, basically. And so you have these little cells of 3 or 4 notes that get played that bleed over into the next 8 bars. And so writing it was kind of strange at first. I definitely overwrote. I put way too many notes in the beginning, and it sounded like a mess. And so I kind of figured out that space is kind of key here. But it all just started with this kind of simple arpeggiation figure of a E major seven chord, with a G sharp in the bass. And I wrote out this kind of simple chord progression and just kind of went from there. I also had this melodic fragment of like do do do. That sort of idea was, which is all over this movement. Those were the two basic kind of ideas that helped me write the material for this kind of opening solo.
Certainly, the economy of means is very important. I can see a contrapuntal study being done on this looping technique that you have here, because I'm thinking about all the different possibilities that could be explored with that. It's very cool. Now, you brought up E major seventh chord, and the tonality between the different movements is a little bit different. One and three are more similar than two, also with like tempo and style, of course, as you've explained. But what were you thinking about the harmonic language in this piece? Because there are very loose tonics sometimes. Seemingly in given instances, especially movement one and three, there's times of atonality or close to it, but I would not call this piece post-tonal or atonal, but it's also not strictly tonal. I don't know. All those things I just said can be taken like a thousand different ways, but how are you thinking about the harmonic language in this piece?
This kind of like harmonic language really depended on what style I was writing for, and it depended on what more on the melodic material. So the first movement, the first theme is super like rock heavy, and so a lot of or like even metal heavy, and so I wanted to focus on these like really dissonant not triads, but dissonant intervals and melodies that kind of stay in line with that metal idea. And then the second movement was actually really jazz influenced. I looked at it's like there's a beautiful album called Charlie Parker with Strings, which is
Classic, classic
so
album.
good,
That's
delicious. It is so good.
one of, if not the best, maybe not the, I don't know. I don't know enough about jazz, but definitely one of the best.
Yeah, I that kind of texture I was really going for. I found some arrangements and transcriptions online. I studied from those, the music of Kapustin, Nikolai Kapustin, who everybody should listen to. It really really influenced the kind of ideas here. And then later on, as this movement progresses, I kind of was just mixing those ideas. I realized that I often treat chord changes as just modulations, and I suppose that means anytime I go to a different chord, I use all the notes of that scale while in that kind of chord area, even if the chord lasts for a few measures. And so,
That is very, I don't know, jazz theory is its own beast, but that is very jazz-like to do something of that sort.
On top of that, and more in the second movement, this is prevalent. I also kind of enjoy mixing tonalities between the harmony and the melody as well, which ends up sounding semi-modal. But a lot of the times I'm thinking like, okay, this melody is in maybe like this B major tonal area while the accompaniment is in E or something, and you get this like Lydian sound. But what happens if you it keeps going, and it's instead the melody goes to F sharp, or like you keep going around that circle of fifths and get brighter and brighter and brighter, while the accompaniment either stays or moves with it or something like that. And so I don't know, especially in this second movement, Noah is a huge fan of Lydian. And so I was like, I'm gonna write you the most Lydian thing ever. And so, you know, Lydian with the has the like sharp four, but a lot of the times you get the sharp nine in the melody. And it's part of that like melodic fragment. And to me, that sounded like Lydian if it was more Lydian. And so I kind of kept going with this idea of like raising everything up higher and higher and higher and higher while this
Lydian, if it was more Lydian.
Yes, exactly. Lydian, sharp nine. New scale, everybody. Get it while it's hot.
New scale dropped. I'm sure there's someone out there who's actually be like, actually, that is the blah 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 modal scale from the na 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 na. Yeah, I'm not good enough with that. So not to make fun of people who do know that, you all are super geniuses. I'm not. So
I'm sure there's a name for it.
oh yeah, probably. There's a name for basically every kind of equal temperament scale that we could think of. All right, cool. Hello.
I do have one more thing I could say about this movement. Another idea behind this movement is, I mean, the central character of this movement is the delay pedal and this kind of decaying figure. Everything at the beginning, where what Noah is playing is this decaying idea where things keep sprouting out from those decrescendos, and so there's Noah is like dovetailing into himself over and over again, and then eventually it like kind of goes down. But the overall idea of that movement was I wanted to go against that and have this kind of oxymoron idea of the delay pedal is at the center, but I want the piece to grow and grow and grow. And there's all these like sorts of, but all sorts of ideas of like living in the face of death and all those sorts of ideas. But that was kind of the central idea that kept pushing me forward and kept creating ideas for me, is that like this violinist is decaying and decaying and fading away while the ensemble is pushing it forward and pushing it forward. And at the end, you finally get this kind of like, I even labeled the expression marking with flowing heaven, and this idea of like pushing forward and forward and forward against that decay, and the violinist ends up somewhere new and somewhere rewarding and relaxing in this like garden-esque atmosphere.
It's funny that you say that because that's almost contrasted with the character of the third movement, though, which I suppose, let's move on to that. And it's titled Scherzo, so you know it's going to be a bit wild. Plus, it's the end of a concerto, so it has to be a bit wild. But I say that it's contrasting that with the violinist finding peace because the expression marking is bloodthirsty. How do you rationalize that with the conclusion of the second movement?
The original kind of tempo or expression marking was going to be kill the soloist. But I don't know if I should publish sheet music with that on it. So this kind of bloodthirsty idea in rehearsal, we were talking about There's all these like so all these like really like outbursts, like angry, all these like 16th note gestures we talked about, as if you're like sawing through bone, like really digging in and really like creating this like powerful, angry sound. I like the idea of, the last movement, the ensemble and the violinists were like in together, and like they were just like coalescing perfectly in this beautiful mix between the two. And then this third movement where they're just like sick of the violinists, and they're like, get out, go away, we're sick of you, interloper, electric, new music,
Interloper.
yeah. And so, but and then I wanted the like violinists to have this like Bugs Bunny sort of like, ha, catch me if you can, if sort of idea. And so I wrote taunting when the first time the soloist enters in the third movement. I don't know. I like this like idea where the ensemble has this very like almost ridiculously pompous like melody that's so classy, and then the violinist comes up with these like weird double stops and like this strange rhythm and this very like jagged, awkward melody, almost kind of poking fun of at poking fun of this kind of classical tradition that's thinks they're too good for the electric violin.
Certainly. And there certainly is some of that out there. Actually, a good deal of that out there, I could say, as a violinist or former. Nah, not former. I don't know. The calluses on my fingers are close to gone,
Oh
probably.
no.
So, one more general question about the piece. So especially in the third movement, the accompaniment figures are thick. There is a lot going on in the accompaniment. I mean, there is generally throughout the piece, less so in the second movement, which makes stylistic sense. How did you juggle all of that? Because as you said, you wrote it where it can be played conversely as a solo instrument, as it was in the premiere and the recording with double stops and all those figures, but it also can be fluently played Debussy with multiple instruments. And so how did you approach the ensemble writing? I don't know. It's like concerto writing to me seems magical because there's this like balancing act, and I'm sure you had even more to balance with the fact that they're all electric.
Yeah, it was, I don't know, this was the first movement I wrote, and so a lot of it was me trying to figure out how to write for an ensemble with soloist. And I think at points I ended up overdoing it and over orchestrating and giving everybody something to do all the time. I think ultimately I think it adds to the character of this movement, but I'm glad I got it. I figured that out while I was writing this movement. Or like I had points where I would write kind of sections and wish I had more instruments to write for, so I could like fill out this chord or like make this moment more percussive or more powerful. But I'm glad I didn't add anything else. It's dense, it's super active in the ensemble.
Sure. And so before we move on to the last part of the podcast, so this concerto is a massive achievement for you, and congratulations on it. Not just
Thank you.
a year of work completed, a very deep and intricate collaboration with Noah as the soloist, the length of it, the complexities of it, and novelty makes it sound like juvenile, but like the how novel the idea is to do it, at least to I would say most people, including myself. And hell, it's your thesis too. Not just that it's a big work, it is literally like the marketed point of your master's almost. It's weird to say send it off in one question, but is there anything else you want to say about this piece?
I suppose that if you are a composer and you're listening, reach out to me or Noah J. Gruenberg. You will find him on Facebook or whatever, wherever you look. Write him music. He will play you music. I guarantee it. And he will play it multiple times in multiple countries. He played a piece of mine at the opera house where Wagner premiered his operas in Bayreuth. Why? That shouldn't have. A piece of mine should not be played there quite just yet. That's ridiculous. And so I write for Noah. He's an amazing collaborator. Throughout this whole process, I pestered him with questions and like, because obviously I have no idea what I'm doing when I'm writing for six string electric violin for the first time. And so double stops and these like quick figures at the end of movement two and all these runs and acrobatics that the instrument can do, as well as on top of all the pedals and everything I tried to show off in this piece. He was a huge component in helping me get across what I was trying to get across in a way he was able to perform it. And yeah, I just write for Noah and talk to the performers you're writing for.
Certainly, that last part is a universal advice, if
Yes.
possible. Certainly, a virtue for many. So, coming to the last part of this podcast, typically here is where I ask, what does music mean to you? What does composition mean in your life? But, not that your thoughts might not have changed or you might not have a new answer or something, but we've covered that in previous podcasts. So you're coming to the end of your master's degree, just as I am. And now you've spent a fair amount of time in academia. You have found yourself out of long peace jail. You have completed your thesis, or for the most part. What are some perspectives that have changed, or some of your thoughts about music academia, composition academia? Hell, you can talk about theory if you want. Just, what's been going through your head with all that?
I don't know. So
Oh, great.
I don't know
Okay.
nothing. No. Well, I'll start out by saying after my master's, I'm going to be taking a gap year. And that's something I'd maybe recommend to a lot of people because I came into the master's with this huge project that I wanted to get done. And I'm really glad I ended up doing it at Florida State where I could get the help that I needed to like figure this out and push through it. But I ended up not coming to Florida State with kind of a plan of attack and like ideas of what I wanted to get out of my time here. And I think there's some opportunities I missed out on just because I wasn't aware of them or I wasn't consciously making an effort. For example, like my first year here, I was able to get two pieces performed. I made connections with those performers. But I was just like a complete troglodyte.
I don't call yourself a troglodyte.
I was very I would go home, go to classes, say hi to a few people, and then come back home, write my music and do homework. And I don't know. My first year, I don't think I made the most of the opportunity. Like, there's just so many talented individuals here, and you just need to like go up to them and like say hi and ask to get coffee or something, or like join an ensemble for an instrument you don't play, or like join just do all these sort of things. And this most recent semester, I was like part of the old time ensemble playing kind of old folk music, and I've met a bunch of people that I wish I've met earlier. And I don't know. I think like yes, you get kind of a degree and you get a lot of education out of the your experience here, but you just need to like make as many connections as you can. You need to talk to performers and other composers and theorists, and that's something I'm learning to do. But something I've gotten much better at it this past semester, I think. And so that's kind of a larger focus for me than like taking this like class on an advanced theory maybe. And I that's that is as well like super helpful, and like that's why I'm getting the degree and what the degree is for and stuff like that. But I should say I shouldn't neglect those kind of other non grade oriented aspects of getting a master's degree or getting a higher level degree, especially at like a master's degree, because you're here for 2 years, which feels like nothing. And I heard people say that, and I was like, okay, sure. And then I'm here, and I'm like, oh no, they were serious. They weren't lying. It feels like no time. But I think a lot of programs will just give you what you put into it. They have the resources available, but you need to come with like a plan, or like, I want to make this project happen. How do I make it happen? People will be there to make it happen, but they're not going to be like, hey, you should write a piece for this soloist and this ensemble, and you need to do the research and come to the degree with plans to make the most out of it. And I mean, th this obviously isn't like, this is a pretty specific composer advice. maybe not super applicable for other degrees, and maybe not what everyone is looking for out of their degree. But personally, eventually when I do go to my doctorate, I'm going to come with like pieces I want to write, holes in my oeuvre that need to be filled. Like, I haven't written for this ensemble. I need to write for this. I want to apply to these festivals. What I need to get ready and get prepared. So yeah, I don't know. More preparation.
Yeah, I mean, I can't fault you on that. I don't think anyone really can because, and also, I think your advice is not too specific to composition because that's a similar experience that I've had for a handful of reasons. It felt like the first year of my master's, I was treading water. But this semester, the start of the first half of the second year for me has been by far the most productive time in my master's. It's not even close. And part of it is just a shift in mindset after being in the pool for a little bit. And I'm sure it's similar with you, but it's like I've talked loosely on the podcast a handful of times about my experience at the beginning of my master's at Florida State. Not to disparage anyone or anything specifically, but I was very disillusioned when I first came, because I thought a master's in theory, or at least what I was getting myself into, was one thing, and it turned out to not be. That's a story for a different time, and perhaps when I'm older and have better perspective. But because of that, and because like I had a plan, but it turned out that plan wouldn't really work at Florida State, at least in the way I perceived it, I didn't really know what to do. I did what you said, like you go to class, you do your assignment, you see friends, you do your assignment, you go home, maybe homework, go back to class. Like it was not very dynamic in interaction, in research, in exploring your own avenues. Like I don't know, that I just didn't know what was expected of me other than what was on the syllabus, which is basically what we're describing. I mean, you had two pieces performed, which is really cool. Certainly more than I did. I mean, not that I would have a piece performed, but more than I did in my first year. And part of it, I've really started thinking about like why this is, because I just completed my PhD applications. And when doing that, you're essentially compiling what your life has been up until this point. And so, I'm submitting work that I've done very recently that's representative of what I can do. And that forces me to reflect a bit. And I'm not going to pin it on Florida State. I think it's more on how people talk about master's programs while in undergrad. Because I'm not blaming University of Florida, my undergrad. I just think the culture of like what to expect for a master's degree, especially in the arts, I don't think people talk about it or quote unquote prepare prospective undergrad or prospective graduate students for the kind of environment. Because you're right, it is very much, maybe not at the immediate beginning, pedagogy, right, Will? Maybe not at the immediate beginning, but it really is choose your own adventure with a lot of different things. And I'm sure, especially with composition, having to go out of your way to do networking and such, which is less of an emphasis with theory. It still is, but it's less so. But just, I don't think I came into the Masters with a good mindset in what to do. And so then when my personal, probably narrow plan was not coming to the way that I wanted it to, I didn't really know what to do and didn't really adjust. And so, yeah, I mean, in a different way, but I understand like what you're getting at there. Like the attitude I have now and like my motivation and like I'm ready to go to the PhD interviews, hopefully in February, and I don't think they go as late as March, but February, and say, this is what I want to work on, this is what I want to accomplish, and this is how I want to accomplish it. I'm ready to say those things. Maybe I thought I was ready to say those things at the beginning of the Masters, but I was wrong. Like, first year was wild.
Yeah, I think you're like dead on with this like choose your own adventure. I think the undergrad, you have so many like God, being a music major, you have so many requirements and every class is 0.5 credits or something and you need to get all these like things done and everyone's like take this class and this class and this class. And then you get to your master's and they're like, what do you want to do? And then you're like, I
What do you
what?
mean?
What do you mean? And so I don't know.
I
Maybe
signed up for
like
this. You tell me.
yeah, maybe it is just like you need to be at your master's to kind of realize that what like figure out what you want to actually be doing.
I will
But
say one thing
yeah.
that I'm not a huge fan of, and I don't believe this is a Florida State specific thing, is this, at least this is in theory at least. Especially because theory hinges a lot on specialization. Composition does for what you can say, I'm this kind of composer or whatever, but also they kind of, like you were saying, they kind of expect you to have experience writing for a little bit of everything. Even, like I haven't written for this ensemble or I need something in this ensemble so I can prove I can do it. But it's this whole thing where masters is like exploring your options in a more professional area. In a professional environment is how it was introduced to me. But in my experience, it's like you're saying, you get so much more out of it if you know exactly what you want when you're going in. But that's not how it's pitched. Like, because it's pitched as, okay, you're coming here to start your specialization, to start being more professional in what you want to do specifically within whatever the degree is. But then once you get there, it's like, okay, are you ready to do that thing? Well, I don't know what that thing is. Okay. Clock's tick. The clock is ticking. Like, figure it out. So where's the issue with that? Other than the vibe, I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to pinpoint. It's such like a vague idea, but it's there. It's there, but I don't
It is like
know.
to give a huge master's success story. I'm sure he wouldn't mind me bringing him up, but our colleague Zachary, he has been killing it since day one at Florida State. And in his master's in music theory, soon to be a PhD, I don't know, at Florida State or whatever, he'll probably get accepted to 10 different places. But he, brilliant theorist, pop theorist specifically in metal, conferences, DISs, directed independent studies with almost every professor, I think, actually, in music theory at Florida State at this point, or at least in the spring. Lots of research, great work, always killing it. And that's because he knew exactly what he wanted when he came in. He was fully prepared, which good on him for that. But he's right, and he's in the right place. And then there's us dipshits. I'm just kidding. No, but Zach's successes are really cool. Really cool. But yeah, it's like a catch 22. Not discouraging people from getting their master's in the arts, but just be holistic in your expectations. So we are coming to the close now, and so a lot of context setting about, I feel like this podcast is necessarily less about the piece itself, but because the piece has been such a big part of you, it's just like what's up, Will? But because it's been such a big part of your life up till now, so you kind of, I'm gonna ask, like, what projects are in the barrel for you? Any big projects? You just finished one. You kind of said you want to start filling out your resume a bit or portfolio a bit more, but what's your plans for the spring semester?
So I after the concerto over the fall semester, I wrote a piece called Worm Charmer for alto saxophone and percussion. Super excited about that. Gonna get that performed next semester once I find performers. And then I'm currently working on a brass quintet. I took a independent study along with a semi-independent study because both Brian Gentilla and I took it with Dr. Evan A. Jones at Florida State on transformational theory. And so that piece was kind of, at least the first movement was a result of that class. And I'm going to be continuing to work on that, trying to get performed. And then I don't know, something usually pops up. I'm going to keep working with Noah. A lot of projects. We're working on trying to get the concerto, at least a studio recording down. And so we're working on like getting a click and getting each individual who was able to premiere the piece on that recording and playing along with the click. So we have a very, I mean, they played it incredible, but incredibly, but we were only able to record like the room mics basically. And so it's like electronic instruments in a space and trying to get levels on six electric instruments. Whew, for a 25-minute piece.
Yeah, certainly.
Wow.
We all certainly saw that at the start of the concert. No tea, no shade. But
Oh no. I mean, we were just weren't given enough time
yeah.
because of whatever reason. We weren't allowed to get in the space early enough, and we had to
Yeah.
sound check and set up an electric music concert in an hour. We did it in like an hour 15 or something. That was insane. We did it. So getting that together as well. Would love We're going to be using that studio recording and distributing it on streaming platforms in the semi-near future, hopefully. And so we can use that kind of really professional sounding recording to perhaps seduce larger orchestras into playing the piece. So I'm going to be working on that, and then just other stuff. Enjoying maybe a gap year between my master's and DMA, and just writing music and applying to festivals and doing all the composer stuff.
Doing all the composer stuff, certainly. And
Yeah.
although not ready to announce it whatsoever, because I literally just brought it up to Will right before the recording, but as a sneak little question in the I in the minds of listeners, Will and I have a possible potential, we'll see. Literally just asked Will about it right before we hit record. Collaboration for the future. Everyone will be fully aware of it once it happens, if it does happen, but we'll see. We'll
My
see.
people will talk to your people.
Yeah, literally. My people will talk to you. Yeah, my people, you mean my girlfriend manages my schedule. She doesn't, but she kind of does. Anyways, so yeah, cool. Good stuff. We still got another semester of the masters to go. Plenty of things to go right and wrong. Hopefully more right than wrong. All right, well, so what would be your preferred way for people to contact you with comments, questions, commissions, so on?
I'm working on setting up a website still. So honestly, I'm on Instagram, Will Davenport, or Will underscore the underscore composer. Pretty easy to find. Will the composer on Instagram, or you can email me, wdavenportcomposer@ gmail.com. So super happy to, even if you just have questions and want to talk about the piece, I'm super happy to talk about it. A composer's favorite thing to do is talk about his own music. So,
I have learned that. I have learned that through
yes.
this podcast.
You've given yourself the best chance at getting guests on this.
Yes. All right, cool. So here we are at the end again for the third time, which I'm very happy that you came on again. It's fun talking to you. I mean, I see you very often, but it's fun talking to you periodically, officially here on the podcast. And so I'll leave you off with a familiar question. What would you say to the audience? Anything that you have, some wisdom, some advice, some comment, anything we've talked about today, anything about music, life, composition, what would that be?
I would say just keep collaborating with people. I mean, this podcast is a great example. I think I've come to the realization recently that, like, I don't know, I think what a lot of people get out of religion and this kind of like community building process that lots of people get together and do, I think I often get out of music. And so over this past semester, I mean, especially over this past semester working on this concerto and working with so many amazing performers and people and talking with kind of other bishops of music and having all these opportunities to come together and like create this thing that serves no like survival purpose is really just, it's been fantastic. I've refortified my love of the music and of working with people and doing all the hard work that goes into creating music with people that I kind of lost track of over the course of writing this giant piece. The large piece Jail is really, it really is something. So it's been really rewarding working with people and kind of revitalizing my experiences with music. So I don't know.
It sounds like you do know a little bit at least, but
I know a little.
yeah, you know a little. No, music, at least in my perspective, is very little without the people behind it. All right, well, thank you for coming on to the Theorist Composer Collaboration once again, but this time to show your very much, in many ways, crowning achievement of a piece, Concerto for Six String Electric Violin. It was a pleasure to talk to you about it. And to, in the time that I've known you, the whole time that you've been working on it, to see it be developed and then finally played and premiered. So, thank you very much for coming on to the podcast again to talk about it, to share it, and discuss a whole bunch of stuff. Thank you.
Of course. Thank you for having me. It was an awesome experience, like always.
Hello, this is Aaron again, and I want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Theorist Composer Collaboration. I also want to give another big thank you to Will Davenport for coming back onto the podcast and for sharing his piece, Concerto for Six String Electric Violin. Will's contact info is listed in the description. I would appreciate it if you could show him some support. For further updates and notifications on the Theorist Composer Collaboration, make sure to follow our Instagram and Facebook pages. You can listen to future episodes through our host website, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, and YouTube. So make sure you subscribe to the platform of your choosing. If you want to monetarily support the work of the TCC, you can click the link to our Buy Me a Coffee page. All donations are highly appreciated. All of the relevant links to follow, listen to, and support the show are in the description. TCC episodes are posted every other week on Mondays, and don't miss our blog posts, which go live a few days before a new episode is added. Again, make sure to follow our social media accounts and relevant streaming platforms, because you won't want to miss any of it. But until then, this is Aaron, and thank you for joining the TCC.